Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A nice looking day. A little bit cooler than yesterday, but again, hey, we're less than a week away from Christmas, so not a problem there. Welcome in, everybody. Bill, I am doing it from the homestead again today. Better to be safe and not be out amongst folks to either get sick or get folks sick, things like that. For one more day at least, Dan should be back. Speaking of one more day without Dan, who is been up in North Carolina with the Troy women's basketball team. He should be back tomorrow, which will, by the way, be our last show for a week. We're getting the week of Christmas off, so really, really happy about that. Very thankful for that. But we've got two more shows today and tomorrow, and it's Thursday, and that means that Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer also alongside. I mean, on a very It's a busy, busy time with basketball, some news there from basketball, an update on Jani Broome as the Tigers get ready to take on Purdue up in Birmingham. Football, man, the transfer portal just continues to just roll. More players entering, more players deciding where they're going to go. Auburn is on an amazing clip right now. This is day 11. That the transfer portal has been open. Players didn't even start visiting until the third day, but Auburn now has 11 new players that have entered through the transfer portal. So we'll talk about that and much, much more as we head on through the show. Ferg, this is a busy, busy time as we head up toward Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those where it's like, I'm having a hard enough time keeping track of everything with football, you know, with basketball taking so much time and attention right now because of how well they're playing. But, I mean, yeah, Auburn football, you know, I said it last week when I was in the studio, and I think it's just been reaffirmed here in the last 7 days, is just you feel like Auburn knew coming into this transfer portal window that they couldn't wait around, you know, and they needed to hit it and be aggressive. And to be aggressive for the main point of, hey, this team needs to produce next season. They need to be better. They need to have a winning season. They need to start selling some on-field progress. And the best way to do that is going and getting guys that can help you right away. And so Auburn's been one of the most active teams in the transfer portal. They've got a really balanced class so far. I think they addressed their main needs. I think they got stronger at some positions. There's still some spots they want to hit for sure and still some big targets out there. But, I mean, they've done a really, really good job. And then on top of that, I think one of the things that's really helpful for Auburn is most of the guys, you know, that they've lost in the transfer portal, and this has kind of been a theme under Hugh Freeze, you know, guys that you would have liked to have had, you know, long term, but no, like, starter quality players right off the bat, like clear-cut starters that you're losing through the transfer portal, and not everybody can say that in college football, especially not every team in the SEC.
No, you're absolutely right. You look around and you see players that you're very familiar with out of the schools in the conference that have gone into the portal, and you know, Auburn dodged a bullet. I mean, I thought you know, they were on the verge of losing a player that they really really didn't want to, before they were able to convince Amaris Williams to stick around, because he was a very highly touted player that Auburn had flipped at the last minute a year ago. We saw him sparingly as a true freshman, but there's no questioning his potential.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Amaris, and I think I see this with what Auburn's done so far in the transfer portal, is I think it just really communicates how Auburn's NIL operation has done really well. You know, when a guy goes into the transfer portal and a couple days later, he's like, no, I'm pulling back out, you know, I'm going to stay here. That communicates to me that you have that money to spend and you're doing it, and yep. You're prioritizing your talent moving forward. Because, again, recruiting is awesome. You need to have recruiting, but – you know, if you can't retain those guys, it's not gonna really matter long term. And so Amaris Williams was one of those guys that you definitely wanted to retain. And a big pick. I thought he flashed last season in some spots. I think he's a guy that can continue to be, you know, the type of player you want to bring in year in and year out on this Auburn defensive front. And really, really talented player. I'm interested in kind of what year two looks like for him. He strikes me as one of those classic kind of like year two, you know, like that sophomore surge that we talk about with guys. Auburn did whatever it takes to keep him around right now, and that's a really, really good sign, because there are some really good teams that are in better positions as Auburn as a program right now that are losing guys that are huge, huge, huge players. And so for Auburn, you know, really outside, I think of, you know, I think Walker White's kind of the big one. And even Walker White, you know, you're looking at a situation where you're like, okay, probably not going to play next year, or probably not going to start next year, maybe not for the next couple of years. So that one made a little bit more sense. But yeah, Amaris, because of his position, because of his talent, you definitely could keep him and want to keep him. And they did what they needed to do.
Yeah, and Walker, I haven't seen anything yet today, but visiting Baylor,
yeah,
and that would be really interesting considering Auburn has Baylor on the schedule, including opening the season against them this next year.
Yeah, I don't think Walker White is going to be a kid who starts at Baylor next season. They've got Sawyer Robertson, who's really good, and Baylor, you know, finished the season with six straight wins. That's going to be a tough game for Auburn in week one. But, yeah, I think it's interesting. I think you go with that, and then the Phoenix Jackson commitment, you know, I mean, that was one of the bizarre, like, portal things where I think we're seeing, like, agents and, like, all that kind of getting involved where, you know, things are, you know, everybody's trying to market themselves and kind of hype things up. So, you know, Phoenix Jackson from Fresno State, everybody reported, yeah, he's committing to Auburn even before he even got to campus. Now he's at Baylor, so that's going to be very interesting to see coming up. But, that's a – you know, Auburn hadn't gotten every single player that they wanted, but I mean, they've hit a lot of needs, and I think if they can get across the finish line with Eric Singleton, who was back on campus today for an unofficial, that would be really, really big. You know, they pick up Horatio Fields this afternoon as well, the big wide receiver from Wake Forest. I thought, you know, adding, you know, they wanted Singleton because of his ability to, he's such an explosive player, especially in the slot. He fits really well with what Auburn wants to do, but I also thought, you know, what they did with KLS last season, getting an experienced outside guy as they continue to develop their younger guys out there was big, and Fields checks those boxes. And so, like I said, you know, if they could get across the finish line with Eric Singleton, who some consider to be the best player in the portal right now, I think that would be, you know, you feel even better about an Auburn offense that just has so much pressure on them to produce next season.
Yeah, no question about it. And the fact that he's back on campus unofficially today – you'd feel like, well, this is now if he leaves and we don't hear anything, over the next 24 hours, you're probably not feeling as good. But just getting him in here after he's taken all of his officials, I think that's a very good sign. Very good sign for Auburn. Fields gives him, a big guy on the outside too. He's 6'3", over 200 pounds, so gives him a nice target. A guy who really came into his own this year in his fourth year at Wake. Had 39 catches for nearly 500 yards this past year after, you know, not really getting many numbers his first 3 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, you get a guy who's produced at a power conference, and you want to see what he can do kind of moving forward with your team. I think he's you lose Camden Brown, you lose Caleb Burton, and you get to replace him with a guy who's got some more production in his past at a power conference level is exactly what you want. And then, Singleton. It's just, he's an electric player, and it would be a really good thing for Auburn if they could get him, considering that they had a shot at him the first time around, and he ends up going to Georgia Tech, and he's just been such a big play guy there, and I think he fits in really, really well with what, you know, Auburn wants to do kind of long term at the wide receiver position. There's going to be so many questions this year with Jackson Arnold and you know, Deuce Knight, and, you know, can Auburn's offense get better in some way after what was a very disappointing 2024 season, especially when it comes to scoring and finishing drives. Those questions are going to remain all the way till September next year, but you do feel better just about their chances to potentially take that step forward if they have guys that have proven that they can do this at the at this level, in addition to what you have coming back, and in addition, of course, to some of the younger players with a lot of potential.
Sure. We'll talk more about the portal as we continue, because there's still a lot more names to talk about, possibilities that Auburn has. But wanted to go ahead and get your thoughts on the news, good news today about Jahni Broome.
Yeah, great news yesterday and today about Jahni Broome, that he didn't have any sort of internal damage to his shoulder. It is a different type of injury, Bruce Pearl said, than what he had last year, so it's a little different. Bruce, you know, mentioning that he didn't really know what his status would be Saturday for Purdue. Wouldn't say if it, you know, he's like, I don't know if it's questionable, unlikely, whatever. All he knew is that he wasn't going to, you know, practice fully on Thursday. I mean, but he is one of those guys that, you know, having him around, having him do anything, having him be able to move that shoulder is such a good spot to be in.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, if you get into a situation where you might try to use him against Purdue or moving forward, that you have that option. But, you know, if I had to place a bet on what happens on Saturday, is that he makes the trip. You know, as Pearl said, he's going to make the trip. Probably doesn't play, but you know, the fact that, you know, you fear the worst if you're an Auburn fan when you see him go out like that early, because of how valuable he is, and I mean, it's about the best case scenario you can get for an injury, especially an injury to a shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, with him leaving the ball game not even 3 minutes in the other night, I mean, that was what everybody, and it had to be a big concern for the Auburn, you know, for the Auburn players, for the Auburn team.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, Auburn was, you know, they were ahead comfortably, but things didn't really click until after halftime. And I felt like that's when, you know, when maybe Jahni was able to ease some of their concerns as well. Because, you know, looked like it was going to be a comfortable win. But, boy, it sure didn't look like Auburn had any chance of covering that ridiculous line. But they just exploded there in the second half.
They did, and they played really, really well after halftime. You talk about a team scoring, you know, as many as they did in the second half, 57 in the second. They, Dan and I were talking about it today. They outscored Georgia State 37-17 in the final 10 minutes of that game.
I mean, continued.
They had an awesome half in the final 10 minutes of that game. So that was a really, really good sign. And you know, I think Saturday against Purdue, and I'm sure we'll talk about it throughout the show, like, I think Saturday against Purdue is definitely a tougher game and a tougher matchup without Jahni Broome. But I do like the way Auburn matches up in several areas with Purdue. And then on top of that, if you don't have Jahni Broome, well, good grief, doesn't it help that they came off of they're coming off of a game where Chaney Johnson had a career performance and did a lot of things that you normally get out of Jahni Broome. You know, and Chaney was able to do a lot of that, and you know, as Bruce Pearl said after the game on Tuesday, these games where you have to be physical down low and really fight it out in the paint, those are the games where Chaney Johnson thrives. I mean, I looked it up the other day, put it in my mailbag today. Chaney Johnson is shooting like 80% in the paint this year. He's one of the best inside scorers in college basketball, period. And so if you don't have Jahni Broome, you can have him.
Usually that's a guy that's 2 or 3 inches taller than Chaney doing that.
Yeah, no, he's just so physical and so explosive that even if you're taller than him, even if you've got some inches on him or some pounds on him, he's so athletic, so physical, so tough that he finds a way to make stuff happen.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Bill with you here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Drew, of course, at the controls. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390, or text us on The Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And that number is 334-564-1840. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls here on this Thursday edition. And I don't remember, did we talk about Auburn's 2025 schedule last week, Justin?
Yes, we did. We did. Yeah, okay. that was one of the big ones last week. It's, again, I keep saying it's kind of like with the whole thing with the transfer portal and working quick and getting these guys in right now. You're not going to have much of a grace period at the beginning of next season with the way that schedule starts.
You're not kidding. No, you're absolutely not kidding. I mean, with four of your first six, three road games and then Georgia,
yep,
in your first six, and you'd better not take the weekend off for either Ball State or South Alabama, your second and third game.
Nope, not at all. It just, again, it goes back to, there's going to be so much this offseason about, depending on what side of the fence you are on as an Auburn fan out there with Hugh Freeze and hot seat pressure, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to talk. Yep. Your results are going to vary, but I do think what we have seen over the last few weeks is the work and the action of a coaching staff that knows it ain't going to be easy next season, but you have to be better. And so, it beats the heck out of the alternative, because there's some really good programs and some teams that, are in spots that Auburn would love to be in right now, like playing bowl games and having like tangible, like, okay, this is progress with the coaching staff. They're getting better. There's some programs that are in that spot right now that are losing players left and right. And Auburn has avoided that, and that's a really, really good sign. I said this with Dan on our podcast today. I think there's so much of what Auburn is doing right now that, I guess, away from the field, away from the on-field results, is exactly what you want. You want to recruit. You want to retain. You want to,
yep,
you want to build a good culture and all that, and you just haven't been able to turn that into actual on-field progress yet. So, again, beats the heck out of the alternative, but it's really interesting spot to be in. Like, they have so much potential, they just got to follow through on it, and a lot of that's going to come down to Hugh Freeze and his staff figuring it out and making it work. But, I think Auburn's roster is in a really good spot. Their roster construction and retention, I think, is one of the better ones in Power Conference football. The problem is the results aren't matching it right now.
Yeah, that's a credit to the staff that Freeze has brought in. I think they're doing a great job. And we talked about it a few days ago, and sort of jokingly, but no, seriously, I don't know that it's a situation right now that you'd be able to do it as well if you were having to be preparing for a bowl game or any kind of competition.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that is a great point. It is one of those things where it's like you'd rather be in a bowl game because you have a win. It means you have a winning season, which means you
got a better record.
Better, yeah. It means you were better this season. However, if you're in the situation you're in right now, you need to make the most of it, and making the most of it is just going hammer down on roster construction. And they've been able to do that. It's just there's some real, real questions about how it's all going to work next season, and what changes they're going to make to prevent a repeat from last year. But if it is going to get better, the only way it's going to, one of the only ways it's going to happen is if they're better on the field, like better talent, I should say. And between the transfer portal and the recruiting and what they've been able to keep around on the roster, I think we're going to say it again next season. Auburn's going to be a better football team in terms of talent. The question is are they going to be a better team on the field? Because that ultimately is what matters.
Yeah, and a couple of the things that it'll be really interesting to see if there are some adjustments in how they handle red zone, because that was just a big, big problem for Auburn this year. Auburn moved the ball between the 30s. I mean, the numbers tell you that they didn't have that much difficulty moving the ball until they got in or near the red zone.
Yeah, no, 100%. And in the beginning of the year, it was turnovers, and the end of the year, it was just a lack of consistency, a lack of efficiency, and just kind of finishing those drives off. And what makes it tougher for Auburn next season is you're going to do it with a new quarterback, a new running back, and one of your a receiver that is you know, your top receiver last year. Like you're having to reset so much, but they need to figure out ways to get better. And that red zone thing is crazy because, like, you know, you look at Auburn last season. Like Auburn was a better passing team than they were, much better passing team than they were in 2023. Yep. And a lot of the numbers are great, but then when you look at stuff that takes like finishing drives and stuff in a context, stuff like EPA and stuff and yards, you know, echo rate, points per drive and all that, they were way down this season because, you know, if you can move the ball between the 20s and the 30s, cool, that's awesome. You know, people really, really like that. But if it doesn't have any finished product, it's all kind of for nothing. So that was kind of the story of Auburn's offense this year. When they were more talented and more experienced, and in some ways they were better, but in the way that matters the most, which is putting points on the board, they were worse. And that's how you can have a better team and a better roster and finish worse. Like that's the way you do it. And Auburn was even better on the defensive side of the ball this season, but you wasted all that potential because the point of football, the ultimate goal in football is finish your drives. Like that so much of football comes down to who finishes their drives and who doesn't, and how you make that happen and how you prevent that from happening on the other side, because apparently with the way modern football is played, you know, big plays are going to happen. Guys are going to move between the 20s. That's just the way the sport is right now at every level. Right now, though, on you know, for Auburn, it's just they did not have that killer instinct and that finishing touch this year, and that is how you underachieve at a grand rate like Auburn did.
Love to get your thoughts on the quarterback room now. Now, you, as we mentioned, with Walker White out, Auburn's every scholarship quarterback that was on Auburn's roster last year will not be back, and the only quarterbacks right now that look like they'll be on campus for winter workouts and spring practice are Jackson Arnold and Deuce Knight, the incoming freshman, with Ashton Daniels coming in after he graduates from Stanford. Just your thoughts on this quarterback room?
Yeah, I mean it's definitely different for sure, and I'm interested in seeing how much better it can be. I don't think on paper Jackson Arnold is not a big upgrade from Peyton Thorne. He's just not. I mean, it's just that is not the can't miss, you know, guy that I think people thought they were going to get. The problem is, I think there's only one of those guys even went into the portal so far in this cycle, and it was John Mateer, and Oklahoma got him because they hired his offensive coordinator.
As soon as he went in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they just, boom, straight on. So every quarterback outside of Mateer, and you couldn't afford to wait around on Mateer and think you had a chance because apparently he was always going to go to Oklahoma. Every quarterback outside of that, I think you were going to have question marks and you were going to have pros and cons. The whole battle between do you take Malik Murphy or do you take Jackson Arnold? Arnold makes more sense for what Auburn wants to do on offense in the fact that he can run. He ran really well against Alabama. He ran well in several games last season. Murphy is pretty statuesque in the pocket. Now, a good quarterback, but just pretty statuesque. You know, I don't think Murphy was quite as – you know, I don't think there was a huge gap between those two in terms of passing styles for sure, but results not as much. And a lot of what Auburn is doing with Jackson Arnold right now is they're looking at what happened to Bo Nix at Oregon and saying, can we do this for this guy? You know, former five-star, let him get a reset, give him a different roster around him, and let's just see if we can let him tap back into what made him such a really, really talented player coming out of high school. And why, you know, think about this time last year. I mean, people were really, really excited about Jackson Arnold at Oklahoma.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I said it the other day. I mean, if Auburn had gotten Jackson Arnold a year ago, people would have lost their minds over, you know, getting a five-star, one of the top 10 players in the country out of high school.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, some of the Oklahoma struggle this season for Arnold can be explained. They had no healthy wide receivers. They completely changed their offensive line. They fired their offensive coordinator in the middle of the year. It's just so much went wrong. Now, Jackson Arnold did not have great passing numbers overall, efficiency-wise. He fumbled the ball way too much. But that all comes in context. So you weren't going if you were not going to get that clear-cut upgrade of like, oh, this is a guy that you can significantly say, hey, I feel like he is a better quarterback than what Auburn has had the last couple of seasons. I don't think that guy was in the portal. I just really don't. Outside of Mateer, I don't really think that guy was there. So in you have to deal with the market that that's before you. So going with a guy who's dual threat and also just banking on talent is a better option. I don't think Malik Murphy's a bad quarterback at all. But banking on the guy who was a five star, who was one of the higher rated, not only one of the highest rated quarterback prospects in his class, he's one of the highest rated quarterback prospects of the last 5 years. And pairing that with Deuce Knight,
the highest rated quarterback that Oklahoma had ever signed.
Yeah, and that's Oklahoma. you think about what Oklahoma's done. So I think Deuce Knight is going to be a very interesting guy. I would be surprised if he's ready to play next season and start next season, just because I think he's on the raw end of of what you get out of five-star quarterbacks. But you know, I don't think Jackson Arnold's untouchable by any means when you bring him in. And then the Ashton Daniel thing is interesting. I think Daniels is going to have to be a lot better quarterback than he was at Stanford in order to start at a place like Auburn. But again, different situations, different spots. He is a really, really good runner. And I think he just gives you that kind of insurance policy at quarterback that in case something happens to Arnold or something goes wrong, or you know, you have some experience. You're not turning it over to somebody who's completely new and saying, all right, go for it. So it's a completely different room. I don't know how much better of a room it's going to be, but it does have the potential to be better, and that's where Hugh Freeze, Ken Austin, Derek Nix, whoever's coaching Auburn's offense next season, whatever the brain trust is there, it's on them to get that potential out of them.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and Ashton Daniels, even though he won't be into the spring, you'd figure getting your degree from Stanford in 3 years, he ought to be able to pick things up pretty quickly when he comes in this summer.
Yeah, and I don't blame a kid for wanting to stay at Stanford and get that degree. You know,
no kidding. If
you're on the doorstep of a degree from Stanford, I think it'll be okay if you miss some spring ball.
Yeah, you go ahead and take that. There's no question. You mentioned Malik Murphy. Well, it's interesting that it looks like Kentucky opted for Zach Calzada over Malik Murphy, who today announces that he's going to Oregon State.
Yeah, Murphy is interesting for me because, like, if he had gone to Auburn or he'd gone to Miami, that would have made sense as you know, okay, it's a step up from Duke. Oregon State, I don't really think is that step up.
Yeah.
Kentucky going with Calzada's history. Now, Zach Calzada played really well at Incarnate Word this year. That's also what Incarnate Word does. I mean, they're just really, really good at producing quarterbacks and have been over several different coaching staffs now. So Malik Murphy going to Oregon State, I'm fascinated at what Miami does now, because everybody's been talking about Miami being a team that's going to have to take somebody in the portal. Well, John Mateer's at Oklahoma. Everybody else seems to be kind of taken at this point. Are they going to try to roll the dice on the Quinn Ewers sweepstakes, if that's even a possibility, if he doesn't go pro next year? Or, I mean, like, I'm very curious to see what Miami does, because I feel like they could run into a problem where it's, you know, it's the opposite of what Auburn was running into or what they were trying to avoid this year. You know, Auburn was like, all right, even if the quarterback portal class is not as deep and as talented as it has been in years past, you got to go get somebody. You can't afford to wait around.
Get it. That's right.
And I think Miami might be in a spot where they might wait too late.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that today Auburn has offered another transfer quarterback, Deshaun Purdy, who was at Charlotte this past year and started most of the season as a true freshman, has already been offered by North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and I believe there's somebody else, but Auburn has offered this young man who's 6'4", 215, 220, quarterback, who would be a second-year guy. I guess Auburn is thinking, you know, if they were able to get him, he would slot in there where Walker White was as far as class.
Yeah, no, I think, again, that's what you needed to do. Freeze won the 4 scholarship quarterbacks, so if you're only at 3 right now, you got to get it with somebody. And if there's not a February kid they want to go get, you know, I'm thinking there's not going to be very many February high school kids, period. But, you know, it's like not like a situation where, like, you know, right here in Auburn, Omar Mabson's going to be making that decision coming up. I don't know how many quarterbacks, SEC quality quarterbacks, are going to be in that spot right now. But I did say all this, and I just realized Fernando Mendoza's still out there, so maybe that's where Miami goes.
That's a fit for Miami, absolutely.
And I think it's a fit for Georgia if Georgia decides to go down that road. But of course, you know, Georgia could be in a situation where they feel like they have their quarterback of the future already. So.
Yeah, I mean, Gunner got a chance to show a little bit there in the SEC title game. So, yeah, that's at least going to bring him a little better paycheck.
For sure. No question. For sure.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
And welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on this Thursday show. If you try to get in, it's a little bit tricky with me here doing it remote today because we're unable to use some of the remote equipment that we normally do. So I'm on a phone line, but if you call in, we can bring you up. You can ask the question. I'll be able to hear it. Justin can respond, then I can respond after you're done. So if you'd like to call in, we'd love to get your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Justin, we were talking. I'm going to stick with the transfer portal because I'd love to get your thoughts on some of these. There have been so many additions here since we last spoke last Thursday. I mean, Auburn was just getting started, but we talked about quarterbacks. But I think as important as Auburn reached out and got the left tackle that they have been looking for, and as a matter of fact, adding two tackles through the transfer portal, and I think that is that's critical that they were able to get Xavier Chaplin and then add Mason Murphy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we felt like heading in that the top priorities was a quarterback, and then you had to get at least a left tackle, and I felt like getting two offensive linemen would have been huge. The tackle spots were just so up in the air. Even though you bring in, you know, or you could bring back Dylan Wade and Jeremiah Wright and move some guys around and all that, but you felt like you'd feel a lot more secure if you had two options there that have done it at offensive tackle. Chaplin's done it for the last two seasons in the ACC. Pretty good, you know, ACC offensive lineman, left tackle. Good work in pass protection. Like his game and like what he brings to the table. Big guy. And that's stuff you can't teach right there. So I think I like his fit. Mason Murphy's interesting to me because, you know, right tackle and definitely aggressive. Dude got penalized a decent bit last season at USC. But, you know, a guy that, you know, has some real run blocking potential. I think if he can get more consistent in the pass pro game, he can be a really good right tackle for Auburn. And then if you have experience down the middle, and then also, of course, you got guys like maybe a Tyler Johnson, you know, Braden Joyner, Drake Harder, you know, other guys, other pieces you have on the offensive line that you can have that quality depth there, I think you're in a good spot moving forward for Auburn. You've got to get better on the offensive line. The tackle spots were the big question mark. I mean, I think it was the biggest weakness for Auburn this past year, and it's the biggest, you know, I think it's the thing they've addressed the most. And I'll say it with Chaplin. You know, this time last year we were talking about Auburn getting Percy Lewis, and, you know, not to rag on Percy Lewis, but Percy Lewis was a guy who had played in the SEC, hadn't played a ton, consistently a lot at left tackle, and I think you saw some of that this season where it was just kind of inconsistent. The thing with Xavier Chaplin, though, is like he's been the starter for the last two seasons and has played a whole lot of football at a high level at left tackle, which is, you know, you feel more secure about that. He's got to make it work on this team in a new situation for sure. Nothing's guaranteed, but you do feel a lot more stable about that than you probably did this time last year.
Justin, what would you feel is Auburn's biggest need still out there in the portal now?
I feel like if they got like a really big name, and I know they got Dallas Walker this week.
Uh-huh.
If they got a really big defensive tackle, like a guy that you feel like could come in and be a day one starter around that kind of mix, I like the young talent they have up front. But I think if they could get like a big name, you know, or a guy who's played a lot of football, nose tackle, I think that would be the one thing where I'm like, okay, maybe that's the move. Inside linebacker is kind of the other one. I know they, you know, they picked up the kid from LSU last night. That's a good pickup. Yeah, that's a good pickup. However, you don't have a ton of experience at inside linebacker coming back, and so and he's kind of a lottery ticket pickup that you have there. So those are the kind of the two spots I'm looking at. Everywhere else, I think they've done a really good job of addressing that depth, and some of the spots they want to hit. And then of course, obviously, you know, I think if we're talking about big need, it's just like we were talking about earlier, get across the finish line with Eric Singleton.
Yeah, that, and I'll tell you what, I'll take any kind of pass rusher. It doesn't have to be
sure.
an edge.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I want somebody who's a disruptor as far as a pass rusher.
Yeah, no, I really like, especially when you retain Amaris Williams, I like, you know, you got Kendrick Falk and you got, you know, Amaris coming back. I'm interested to see in what, you know, we talk about sophomore jumps, like what, you know, what can you do when you have, you know, healthy guys for that for year two there. And
Devonta
then
Waller and Joe Phillips.
Yeah.
I'm looking to see, you know, Keyron Crawford step up after a full year.
I thought Keyron played really well at the end of last season. And yeah. I think, you know, it's going to be tough to replace Jalen McLeod, but, you know, I think Jalen McLeod was that type of guy that you got out of the portal and really, really wanted. I feel like Clev Lubin's kind of that type of player. But you know, you gotta go get that guy and or get a guy like him. And you know, I think there's room. You can't ever have too many pass rushers for sure.
No question about it. Now, not that this ties in, but I've been wondering about this ever since we saw the news yesterday about Diego Pavia and the temporary injunction that right now is going to allow him. Man, does this not open the door to hundreds of players who would have either have an extra year or have some eligibility that look like they're out of it to play junior college football.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be an even bigger nightmare in basketball if it extends
God,
to that.
No kidding.
I went on a pretty big soapbox about this during our podcast today. I won't go into it all here, but I'll just say this. I don't like this. I really don't like this.
Tell me that a 20-year-old who's played 2 years of junior college is on an equal level with an 18-year-old freshman.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not trying to air it out here because, you know, he's a really, really good player and I think Auburn's really benefit from him. But I was looking this up the other day. Chad Baker Mazzara turns 25 next month.
Right.
And it's like, are you telling me a guy like him could get another year because he went to junior college? Like, I don't know. I really, it would be different, Bill, I think, if we just didn't do the whole COVID thing where guys got year, like basketball guys got 2 free years. But, like, you know, if we just didn't do this thing where you had so many fifth, sixth, and even seventh year guys playing.
Well,
and now you're doing this again, like, you know, with the situation. I mean, if this was just like 10, 15 years ago, somebody making that move like that, maybe. But, like, I'm just so burnt out by everybody getting another year. And I don't want to be a slippery slope guy, but, like, what's if we're just saying the NCAA has no power here and anybody can play whatever they want? Well, I mean, is it going to stop at junior college, guys? Like, is
no,
it just
absolutely not? Absolutely not. I talked about it yesterday at the end of the show. It's like there's nothing to prevent. I mean, one of Pavia's big arguments is this is preventing him from making a living, from earning a living. Well, I mean, why wouldn't every player who's running out of eligibility feel the same way? It's like, hey, as long as they'll pay me, let me play. What does it matter how many years? No, I mean,
I'm not going to play in the NFL, so
yeah.
Let me.
Oh, I love it in college, sure. But, I mean, you know, mom and dad weren't going to help everybody stay in school for 10 years. And, I mean, no, it's just it's crazy. But I can't see the NCAA winning
if this
goes to court.
No, not at all, because they're just getting run up every time they go into court. And I'll also say this. Here's another – this is not the point of the conversation, but I'm already going to go ahead and get out in front of it. If Diego Pavia ends up playing next season for Vanderbilt, I am already tired of hearing about it because I know everything at Vanderbilt gets graded on a curve because it's Vanderbilt, and they have so many institutional and just historical deficiencies compared to the rest of the SEC. They're a completely different school. They're playing a completely different sport. I get that. Diego Pavia was a bottom half quarterback in the SEC this year. And even though, yes, Vanderbilt beat Auburn, right? Diego Pavia didn't do anything. Diego Pavia didn't do anything in that game. And in the second half of the season, people figured him out. People figured him out. But next year, it's going to be like, ooh, Diego Pavia's back. And it's like, I watched him play this season. He's still the New Mexico State quarterback. And if you're not playing well, he'll light you up. But, like, even in some of the games that Vandy won this past season, it wasn't like he was just this great. Like, there's going to be, like, this push where people are going to promote, like, oh, all SEC type of guy. And I'm like, stop it. Like, just I hate that. Good player. And I love the story about him betting on himself and going to Vandy and you know, making that move there. But it just feels kind of like overstaying your welcome. And it's just, I don't know. I think the wrong people are going to get the wrong message out of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, it's a shame that, and I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's a shame the NCAA can't, doesn't have the power to be able to do anything about this, because what they should have done, I mean, that's the problem with the NCAA, is there are things they should have done years ago, and they let things go, and they thought they'd worked themselves out, or maybe the people that were in charge decided, hey, it won't be my problem. But, you know, what they should have done years ago is they should have said, look, everybody, from the time you finish high school, you've got 5 years, and you can play all 5 years, and you can play whatever, but you got 5 years to play five. And junior college, you know, whatever division, that's it. And that would have made sense, and you wouldn't have to worry about some of the ridiculous red shirt rules, some of the how questionable is somebody's medical red shirt, all the loopholes that there have been, because now it's not loopholes, they're just gaping holes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I am as pro pay the kids as you're going to find. I am as pro, you know, agency and movement and freedom for the players, because these are the guys who are putting their lives and their livelihood and their bodies on the line for, honestly, other people to make a lot of money, including myself. I get a living because other guys are doing this.
Sure.
However, the NCAA put themselves in this position where you have this no holes barred NIL landscape, and it's like they fought so hard against players getting paid for so long that they were, you know, they never had a plan. And so when people finally figured out what was going on and they finally pushed back on it, it just crumbled. And so, again, like I said, I love the fact that players get paid. I hate the way it's going right now, and I hope this revenue sharing thing can fix some of those problems. With all the issues and all the hoops you got to jump through to pay these players, I feel like it's the right thing to do. You just have to figure it out. The problem is that no one wanted to figure it out, because so many people for so long just said, "Hey, let's keep the status quo because it works for us." And it'll just stay this way forever. And that's not how culture works. That's not how society works. There's always going to be an evolution. There's always going to be a change at some point.
Yeah, and right now the power is on the players' side. And even though they don't have an organization, it's hard to see giving up a lot of what is headed their way.
Yeah, it's a lot of power, and it's completely unchecked. And I feel like, for so long, it was complete power and unchecked on the other side, too. So the answer isn't, you know, the answer isn't just everybody gets to do what they want or one side gets to do whatever they want. The answer is, okay, let's make this equitable for all, or let's try to make this work for all, you know, especially for the players. Because, you know, I keep going back to the fact that, like, this is not going to be good long term if you just keep doing this and you keep kicking the can down the road.
No, I just can't see this being sustainable for, you know, for infinity. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Bill and Justin, Drew at the controls here on the Thursday Drive.
02 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here of hour number one on the Thursday Drive. And Justin, Bruce, meeting with the media today. Obviously, we talked about the Jani news. What else did Bruce have to say today?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big preview on this Purdue team that, you know, they've taken a few losses this season, but there's a lot to like about what they bring to the table. They've got probably the best point guard in the country in Braden Smith. They've got a big man that they're playing through right now who's not 7'3", 7'4", like they originally planned, but one of the best interior scorers in the entire country. They shoot really well from deep. And it's a Matt Painter team. They run awesome stuff on offense and are really well drilled at what they do. So, you know, this was always going to be a tough matchup, even if Jani Broom was healthy. But, you know, I do think this Auburn team is going to come in knowing exactly what they need to do to beat a team like Purdue. It'll be a real test. It'll be a real test for them, for a team that has done so well. Bill, we were talking about it today. Like, if they lose this game and they don't have Jani, if they lose this game, how many Auburn fans could you have told at the beginning of the year, hey, you're going to start 10-2 and you're going to start, 5-2 in quad one games? How many people would have been like, I won't take that? So it's just like, you're kind of playing with house money at this point, but it is a really tough matchup.
Oh, absolutely. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday drive. Got our top of the hour break. David Paschal joins us a little after 5 in hour number 2. Don't forget, we've got Tiger Takes also coming up at the bottom of the hour. So that and much more coming up in hour number 2 of the Thursday drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number 2 of the Thursday Drive. Dan away for one more day. He should be back in town tomorrow, and that will be our final show before Christmas. Matter of fact, we're getting next week off, but we've got another hour here today and then the show tomorrow. Bill, I'm doing the show on remote once again from the household, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is in the studio, along with Drew at the controls. Berg, one thing that happened in hour number 1, did you see the video that Auburn football sent out about the final moment for the north end zone scoreboard?
Yeah, real sad that's it. I wrote about it, when they played A&M. I thought it was really cool that the final game of the old scoreboard and the final thing they got to put was an Auburn win. And that's
right.
Thought that was a really cool kind of sentimental moment. It'll look, better. It'll be the part of the upgrades that Auburn really needs to make at Jordan-Hare Stadium, but a very classic one for sure. And one of the last games I went to as a fan, it was actually the 09 Iron Bowl when I was in high school, we were right under that scoreboard, me and my brother were. So I've got a little bit of an attachment to that one.
Well, honestly, from where my family's seats are, and which aren't far from where we are in the press box,
mm-hmm.
It'll be great to be able to actually see what is being shown to the
yes.
to the rest of the stadium there on the other end. So our family seats are on the top row underneath the upper deck. And so all they can see is maybe the bottom third of the scoreboard there in the south end zone. So hopefully that'll allow them that. Any idea what they're doing with it? This would have been a really cool, auction or something. I mean, with the proceeds going to NIL or to whatever, to scholarship money, because I think somebody would probably ante up a little bit to have put that on their property.
No, I agree. I really interested to see what became of that. That would have been a really really cool spot. Somebody would have put it somewhere. It would have been a nice spot for sure. Yeah, but I haven't heard anything. No.
No, that's interesting. So it is down, and by next year, I mean, we'll be seeing now the progress as the new one gets ready. And I'm sure that's something that Hugh Freeze and the staff will be letting any other transfers or potential recruits know about as well when they bring them in. As we talked an awful lot about the transfer portal in the first hour, and whatever they're doing a really good job of selling their vision to the incoming players.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's the thing is, like, you want to have that culture. You want to have vision. Yeah, Christian Clemente said it on our podcast a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was a really good one. This was kind of the last stand for pitching the future for Auburn. This was kind of the last stand. And so maximize it when you've got it. You can still say, hey, this is a rebuilding process. Hey, you know, you can come in and help us out right away. We feel like we're on the verge. So, I mean, it to their credit, they have been able to kind of lean on that really, really hard.
All right, hour number two of the drive, which is just underway, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Now, as I said, it's a little bit tricky for us today with me on location and on a phone line as we try to bring in callers, but hopefully we can because it's Thursday afternoon here, and yeah, at the second hour of the show, and we're always excited to be able to talk to our good friend from Chattanooga, from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and WGOW, where he's just wrapping up a remote today, and that, of course, is David Pascal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Bill. Hope you are as well.
Well, I've done better. That's why I'm in the house today, just trying to take care of myself and everybody. But you know, the show must go on. At least I heard that somewhere. So we're trying to do our best. But yeah, hey, how's the weather up there? Were you guys outside today?
No, we were not.
Oh,
so
good.
It's you know, it's cold. It's not horrible. It's just 48, so not too bad at all. It's not supposed to be 16 or 17 Saturday night in Columbus, Ohio. That will be cold.
Are you going up for that?
Yes.
Hey, David.
Oh.
Hey, David, I wanted to ask you something because, you know, you obviously up there covering Tennessee. My buddy Mike Wilson, who covers Tennessee, does a great job of it. He made a joke earlier this week. He tweeted it. It was like, you know, this is what people from Ohio think Tennessee is. And he put, like, the state of Tennessee, like, in the Caribbean. Like, I don't think people under, like, there's been so much talk about how cold it's going to be on Saturday night. It's like, I've been to Tennessee plenty of times. It gets cold up there, especially up in the mountain area.
It does. And they had one practice where their Tennessee Twitter account, you know, they practiced in snow flurries. So they made sure that they got a Tennessee helmet and placed it there where they showed the flurries falling all over it and letting them know. But, you know, this week has been kind of interesting because up until today, you know, I think it's been like 58 degrees when they practiced.
Sure.
And, you know, I do think there is a huge difference. When it's 20 degrees, you can still go out there and do what you need to do. It's just like when you think about some of those NFL games where it gets down to zero, and it, you know, because they play into December and January, obviously, and you know, you think about that game in Kansas City last year, game against the Dolphins, where there were reports of fans like having to get fingers amputated. You know, not many, but still, one's too many.
No kidding.
I think 20 degrees is still, you know, fine for them. It is interesting that Tennessee's quarterback from Long Beach, because like heading north from Long Beach is like heading to Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I just thought it was funny this week, just the amount of stuff I've seen about how cold it's going to be. It's like, yeah, man, like it gets cold down here too sometimes.
Yeah, and of course the coldest game for Tennessee is usually the rivalry with Kentucky. That historically has been a November game, and of course the field at Commonwealth or Kroger Field now is typically brown. You know, back in the days when it was grass, but. Yeah, so that's always been the coldest. Everybody keeps asking me, man, are you going to be okay? And I'm like, man, I got my parking pass yesterday. The parking garage is right next to the horseshoe. And it's just, I mean, and you know how it works. When you run down after the game's over, sometimes you're in an interview room, you know, not much bigger than a bathroom, and it's like 85 degrees in there. So it's like, I never overdress for football games just because you never know how hot part of your night's going to be.
Yep.
No, you're right. Have you ever been up to Ohio State, David?
I have not. This will be my first time at the Horseshoe. I've been to Ann Arbor, not for a game, but just to kind of go into that stadium, which is kind of unique in itself because when you walk up on Michigan Stadium, it looks like, you know, you're like, wow, this thing looks like it's like 15 rows up and that's it, because it's a huge crater in the ground. because once you walk in, you're like, oh, wow, this thing is enormous. But, no, I'm looking forward to going to Ohio State. That'll be neat. It's, you know, one of the neat parts of this kind of thing is you will have fan bases that go to different spots. It's weird that Knoxville and Columbus are only like 4 hours apart, but they've never played on either campus site. Their only one meeting was in the Citrus Bowl after the 95 season when you had Peyton Manning and Eddie George.
Wow.
Yeah, and you brought it up. I mean, I know you're not a fan of the expanded playoffs and some of the craziness here, but I love the fact that there are games that are able to be played on teams' home fields, even though, I mean, is what you're hearing, I mean, is what we saw a couple of days ago really what's going on? Did Ohio State fans sort of get shafted trying to get their own ticket?
You know, it is one of those things. If you look on StubHub right now, it's weird, Bill, because, like, tickets to this game, the get-in price now is under $100.
Huh.
And so I think one thing that nobody's really talking about enough is this is a playoff that is happening at a weird time of year. This is the weekend before Christmas. So how many Ohio State fans had planned to visit relatives for Christmas out of the area? How many Ohio State fans, you know, still need to do their Christmas shopping? I remember, and this is a much smaller scale, but I remember several years ago, UTC hosted an FCS playoff game for the first time ever, and it was just something that Chattanoogans weren't used to. They weren't used to football in mid-December, early December, and they had like 4,000 people at the game, which was like a third of what they usually had. So, you know, obviously it's going to be a sellout, but I just think it's a deal where tickets are available for this thing on secondary markets, and it definitely surprised me to see the ticket for this game go under $100, because the wild one is the one tomorrow night in South Bend. Tickets are still like $475 just to get in that thing.
Well, that's because, I mean, it's Indiana, who nobody expected to be there, you know, playing the in-state name school, Notre Dame, even though Indiana is the name of the state. But Indiana-Notre Dame, that is such a huge game for any Indiana fan. I guarantee you that's one of the reasons that the prices have been jacked up for that one.
Exactly, and you're not talking about a 100,000-seat stadium like you are when you're talking about the games at Texas and Ohio State. But, yeah, that is absolutely a proximity thing, and these two teams hardly ever play. I think it's been more than 30 years since they played. So, absolutely, this is the biggest thing, especially to your point, from a Hoosier football standpoint than anybody can remember. I think their last year of significance was like 1967 or something.
Yeah, Kurt Cignetti has done an amazing job there at Indiana this year. But you're right. I mean, it is. Here we are less than a week away from Christmas, and it still doesn't feel like, oh, we're about to have the playoffs. They're about to get started. But here it is, and I thought that was a great point. I hadn't really thought about that with Ohio State, but, hey, a lot of folks, a lot of snowbirds might be, you know, we're thinking about going ahead and make their plans more than a year ahead of time before they even thought about possibly hosting a game. And I would guess there are probably some Ohio State fans that also thought, hey, we're going to be in the top four anyway. We're either in the top four or we're not in.
Yeah, and it's so weird to think that Tennessee is playing Ohio State Saturday night and they still haven't left. I mean, this is absolutely, in many ways, like a regular season game. Tennessee is going up to Columbus tomorrow. And then if Tennessee loses, all of a sudden, my season of covering Vols football is going to be over before Christmas, and that's going to be weird. I mean, it's going to be, you know, I know Auburn season's over, and I know Florida's going to a bowl game and early bowl game to where that's before Christmas, but it is kind of weird that you'll have four teams in the playoffs that will not have any kind of bowl experience whatsoever. They'll just either host a game or go on the road and lose, and their season will be over.
Yeah, that is going to be something. I think you're going to hear an awful lot more about that after these games are over, because it's like, well, now what? Because you're used to, especially if you were going to play in a decent bowl, and obviously anybody who's here in the playoffs would have been in a decent bowl at least. Most times you're figuring you're playing New Year's, so you've got something post-Christmas. Now it's like, hey, they're home for Christmas, and they're there for good. So that's a great point. When you look at the ball games, I mean, there's some pretty comfortable lines in these. I guess Texas is the biggest favorite. when you look at the four games, what game do you look at? I would guess maybe Tennessee, Ohio State. You look at and feel like could be the most competitive for the chance of a, you know, the best chance of having a thriller.
You know, it's funny because I think Ohio State and Tennessee will stay close just because of those defenses. I mean, both of them are in the top five. And so, I mean, it may be that could be a 16-13 game, which may not be everybody's cup of tea. But, I mean, I do think that game is going to be compelling all the way through. Whereas, you know, is SMU ready for this moment? Going to a place like Happy Valley, how do they handle those elements? You know, we've already seen Clemson lose twice to SEC teams, including handily by Georgia. You know, how do they handle the game in Austin? You know, I am kind of intrigued by tomorrow night, you know, because it is one of those that everybody's going to react to this. I mean, if Notre Dame beats Indiana 38-7, you know, everybody's just going to be furious that Indiana got in this thing. And that, to me, is still my biggest complaint about this whole thing, is that we're already beholden to the playoff. I mean, everybody saw that if you're Indiana and you don't schedule anything out of conference, just win your games. The SEC, like we've talked about before, will never go to nine games now. And it's just going to be a tragedy, especially up here with Tennessee and Georgia and Tennessee, Alabama. These are games that happen every year that are now going to happen twice every 4 years when they go to this 1-7 model. And it's because we're all beholden to the playoff already.
Yeah, now on the other side, the pressure's on the SEC. They have complained, and it's not fair, it's not right, and why should we go, you know, you're right, there's no reason to go to nine games. But the SEC needs to now show in the playoffs that they are good. Boy, you don't need Clemson knocking off Texas or, you know, I mean, Ohio State beating Tennessee wouldn't be the end of the world because that's the 8-9 seed, but something like a Clemson over Texas or Georgia to get bumped along the way. I mean, the SEC needs to now show that that they are what they feel like they are.
And I agree. I think if an SEC team is not playing for the championship, then there's going to be a lot of ridicule there from everybody else. And, you know, and I do think for Georgia, and it sounds kind of wild because they lost their quarterback, but I really do think you'll see – with the experience Kirby has developed in big games now, the fact that they do have the entire month off, the fact that Gunnar Stockton actually gives them a little bit of a running dynamic that Beck doesn't. I mean, I'm not saying he's better than Beck because he's not, but he has that running dynamic. But I think the biggest thing for Georgia is you really haven't seen them completely healthy all year with the offensive line and at running back. And I think you'll see that first off in New Orleans. And I just think you'll see a different Georgia team. So I really do like Georgia's chances of making a deep run in this and possibly winning it.
So I'm with you 100% on that. Meanwhile, while all this is going on, the transfer portal is, I mean, it is really popping. Auburn has been on an unbelievable pace. They're averaging a player gained every day that the portal has been open. It's been 11 days. They've added 11 players. Including two quarterbacks, apparently offered a third quarterback today. Just some of your quick takes on what you've seen in the portal.
Well, I think Auburn, you know, is the perfect example for this of just the craziness. And y'all probably saw this too. It was at some point, I guess, was it on Saturday when the Stanford kid and Auburn's official Twitter account posted Deuce Knight and the Stanford kid and the Jackson Arnold, and he, you know, they posted all three quarterbacks talking how much they liked their room. Or no, it was Walker White. That's what it was Walker White, Deuce Knight, and Jackson Arnold. It was after Jackson Arnold committed, so it was those three. And Auburn posted that, their official Twitter account posted that, and then had to take it down after a couple hours because Walker White got in the portal. So it is just a constantly changing world.
Oh, it is crazy, but I got to get your thoughts on this. But before we let you go, because the Diego Pavia, the temporary injunction from that Pavia has gotten, how much could this just? I mean, college football has gotten so insane that it's hard to even recognize it. But if junior college football isn't going to count toward your eligibility, what is the end? There is no end. I don't see where where any players wouldn't just then threaten to sue if they can't just stay around as long as somebody's willing to pay them.
Yeah, I mean, this is also new that I'm still just trying to catch up and read on this. I mean, I do know that Tennessee has that transfer tight end from Alabama, Miles Kitzelman, who has been following the Diego Pavia deal because he started out at Hutchinson in Kansas before he went right to Alabama and then Tennessee. So he's wanting to – I know he's – you know, when the news on Pavia moved, I knew he was going to, apply for an extra year too. So, yeah, this is just the latest in what has just really become a wild, wild – I mean, even just scrolling Twitter on a December day since December 9th started – really, it even started before December 9th. I think Tennessee had three or four players even announced before that last Monday that they were in the portal. So, I mean, it is just nuts to try to keep up with all this. It's almost numbing, really.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it gives us plenty to talk about, but you're right. It's really hard to keep up with it all. Well, David, hope you have a good trip up to Columbus and back. We're not on next Thursday, so hopefully we can get you back in 2 weeks to sort of catch up on it. It'll be the day after, you know, the semifinals. So, I mean, we ought to have plenty to talk about if we can get you back then.
Yeah, that sounds fine. Since we'll be taking a little gap, you guys have a merry, merry Christmas, and just know that I always enjoy coming on with you guys.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we wanted to do. Wish you and your family the happiest of holidays, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
That sounds great. You guys take care.
Thanks, David.
All right, David Pascal joining us from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, WGOW, where his show just wrapped up about 20 minutes ago. We will get to our first break. Justin and I back with you. Justin with us for one more segment as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive, BNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday evening. Bill and Justin Ferguson with us for just another segment. Ferg, before we run out of time, I mean, definitely want to let everybody know if they're not getting the Observer, how they can do so. Or, man, what you talk about a perfect Christmas gift for the Auburn fan.
Yeah, absolutely. AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. It's $5 a month or $50 for the full year for your first year if you subscribe right now. That is available for everybody. So if you're buying it for yourself, if you're buying a gift subscription, if you're buying, and for anything, that is the deal that we are running right now. And, it's a great kind of digital stocking stuffer, for your friends and family. If you got an Auburn fan that's hard to shop for, you can go to auburnobserver.com/gift and you can get a gift subscription. You can set it to go active as soon as you want. All you got to do is have the recipient's email address. And so if you're having like a party, you want to wait till Christmas morning or whatever, you can get it to set and they will be emailed and notified, you know, as soon as that goes active. So, again, it's a great way to get on board. We've got plenty of stuff on the site right now. A lot of basketball, keeping track of everything on our roster tracker on the football side, that you can take advantage of that. And, big mailbag today, big podcast today, Dan and I talking a lot of hoops and football transfer portal as well. Tomorrow I'll preview the Purdue game. I'll be there this weekend. And just keeping track of everything going on with this really, really excellent Auburn basketball team. And, of course, a very busy offseason for Auburn football. So you want to keep track of everything, auburnobserver.com. All of our podcasts, all of our newsletters go straight to you as soon as they drop. And like I said, great time to subscribe, great time to give that gift subscription as well.
Absolutely. And as we were talking a while ago, what an unbelievable start thus far for Auburn. Great news about Janai Froome.
Yep.
I would be surprised if we see him Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see any reason to try to rush it unless he's just, absolutely checked out at 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Bruce Pearl did not rule him out for Saturday. He will make the trip.
Right.
said that he was not practicing fully today. So, you know, I think, though, he's one of those guys that he's just been so effective, and that if he wants to go and he feels like he's ready to go and it's not a danger to him, he will go. But, you know, for Auburn, I think this is such a good test for them. They get an All-American guard. I'm looking at this Denver Jones versus Braden Smith matchup. Should be a whole lot of fun. Can Auburn's front court, especially if they're down Jani Broom, can Auburn's front court stay out of foul trouble? Because Purdue loves to go to the line. That's one of the things they're really, really good at. So I like Auburn's matchup against them defensively, especially if Chaney Johnson can do a lot of the stuff that Jani Broom has done down low, which he did against Georgia State to a great level. I do like the way Auburn sets up against this Purdue defense. Has not been a great Purdue defense this season. And then on top of that, you know, if you're without Jani Broom, I'm looking at Auburn's guards who can go make some plays and get their own buckets. Couple of cold performances shooting from Chad Baker-Mazar after he had been just red hot to start the year. See if he can have a bounce back. He's a guy who can go get his own shot. Good mid-range game. That'd be good there. And then the other one, got to keep an eye on him, Bill, Tahai Pettiford. In the quad one games that Auburn has played this season, in the big games, all the quad one games, Tahai's averaging 13 points. He's shooting 52% from deep in those games. And I think about how slow and methodical Purdue likes to play. Throw Tahai Pettiford in there and let's see if he can speed Purdue up and get him out of their element a little bit, because that's where he thrives, and obviously, like with Chad, can go get his own shot.
Yeah, that is one of the things that is so dangerous for Auburn against the opposition, is there's so many different guys that can do it, can make plays, can create. Chaney can just, you know, Chaney can avoid foul trouble.
Yeah.
That's the big key for me down Chaney, low, because, I mean, if he gets – he and Dylan get in foul trouble, Auburn's in deep trouble.
Yeah, and Chaney and Dylan have had issues in the past getting into foul trouble, so they need to stay out of it. It was funny, after the game on Tuesday night, Chaney Johnson said, it was really good that I stayed out of foul trouble, kind of like making a joke about himself that's why he was able to play so well. Dylan Carwell's got to really, really be keen on that, because this Purdue front court is as good as anybody at drawing that kind of contact and getting to the line. They live at the free throw line, especially their big men. And I look at, you know, one of the most underrated developments of the Georgia State game, I thought, was Turtle Hudson playing as well as he did.
Absolutely, that's what I was about to say. I was waiting for that, because we haven't really mentioned him. Great to see him get that opportunity, and I thought he took advantage.
He definitely did. He even had to play some center at times, and even though he's, you know, only 6'8", I think he definitely can play small ball center really well, because he is hard to knock off the block. Very strong, just a guy that's is going to do a lot of things. And, like, again, offensively, he is not a light of muck. He reminds me kind of like of what you get out of Chris Moore. You're going to get a lot of hustle. You're going to get a lot of defense. You're going to get good rebounding. I thought, though, where Turtle Hudson does a good job, and where he did a really good job in this game against Georgia State, is he just did what was asked of him on offense. He just took what the defense gave him, didn't turn the ball over, had several assists, had several buckets, did a really good job on the boards. You feel a lot more confident, because he played more game. He played more minutes Tuesday night against Georgia State than he had in the last 9 games combined. And so for him to have that kind of layoff and play that well is good. And, you know, he was obviously in the same boat with Ja'Kai Howard with the whole Houston incident. I mean, man, how great has Ja'Kai Howard been off the bench? I mean, it feels like every game, you know, these last 3 games, it feels like he has a spurt for like 2 or 3 minutes where it's just he's going to score at will. And a lot better shooter than I think people give him credit for. And, again, he's another one like Tahai. If Auburn gets a stop, or if Auburn gets a steal and gets out in transition and Purdue's not as comfortable with that, that's a dude who can go full speed all the way to the rim and make something happen.
Oh, no question about it. Looking forward to that Saturday, and you'll be there covering it. Look forward to that as well. Well, I know you're about to head out,
yep.
So want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk again in 2025.
Yeah, that's crazy to think. I mean, this year flew by. It flew by. You know, there's a ton of stuff that happened me personally and professionally this year. It still felt like it's super full by. Yeah, absolutely. So, appreciate you guys as always letting me come on, and always enjoy these Thursdays, and I'm looking forward to another year of it in 2025.
All right, Ferg, take care. Happy holidays. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We've got Tiger Takes with Dylan Cardwell coming up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 23 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday evening. Going to be a cool one tonight, as we're going to have some colder weather here for a few days as we get up closer to Christmas, and I think it'll warm up a little bit by Christmas Day. A reminder that we're on the air again tomorrow. Dan should be back in town, so Dan and Don and I tomorrow, and then we are off next week for Christmas, so we get a Christmas break next week. Really thankful for that. It is Thursday, though. And that means it's time now for Tiger Takes with Auburn Senior Center Dylan Cardwell, brought to you by 12K Salon.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, as we sit down for our weekly talk of Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You can make your next appointment online at 12ksalon.net. We sit down and we talk with Auburn basketball center Dylan Cardwell. Dylan, appreciate you joining us once again this week. This will be the final time we talk to you before the start of 2025, and hope all is well.
Yes, sir. Everything's going great. How are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. And excited to talk to you once again about yet another couple of wins for you guys. We'll talk Ohio State. We'll talk Georgia State. Also preview Purdue coming up this weekend. And there's a lot of storylines that we need to hit on. And so let's flash back a little bit. Let's start talking about Ohio State, the game you guys had in Atlanta this past weekend for the Holiday Hoopsgiving. And it was over from the jump. I mean, from the absolute start, it was over. You guys put it on them early and often and just ran away with it from start to finish. Walk us through how that game was for you guys against the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I got two words for you. I got four words. Well, maybe five. I don't know. I can't count anymore. Anyways, man, Denver Jones and Janai Broome, they just couldn't keep up with their shooting and their scoring. You know, Denver Jones has really been on fire these past two games, and he's only gotten the recognition that I believe he deserves, but he's a real piece for us, and he's starting to pick up his shooting. He's already one of our better defensive players, and he's just so great for us. And obviously, you know, just Janai being Janai. I just think we're too deep of a team, and, you know, it wasn't even our best game. If you look at how we play, we kind of played sloppy. We're forgetting plays. We didn't play how we needed to play. That's something you kind of address in the film room, but, you know, to win a game in that fashion, even when we're not even, like, maybe at, like, 70% of our best, it's just impressive to see.
And there were so many Auburn fans there in Atlanta playing in that NBA arena. It seems like you guys just play and shoot the ball really well in that arena. Is it something about that place that you guys just like to play in?
I have no idea. Like, I think it's the basketball, because we're the only tournament that uses that basketball.
Yeah. Really? Okay. What type of basketball is it? What brand is it?
It's a Spalding, but it just feels different.
Okay.
It looks different as well. It's darker brown, but it's a ball that we play once a year.
So what do we got to do to get Auburn to have those types of basketballs? Because, I mean, you guys win by almost 40 points, and everybody gets in on the action, and it just seems like it's that place. And I guess it's the basketball that makes you guys so good over there. And what a great win that was against a really, really good opponent in Ohio State. You were able to take that, Dylan, and build on that into the game this week against Georgia State. We'll get to the storylines in a second, but just the game as a whole, you guys drop 100-piece on them. You covered a major spread. I mean, got to play back inside of your home fans as well.
Yeah, and it was just a great game. And I don't know what we need to do to get those balls changed, but you know, I try to petition right now if I was Auburn fans to get that basketball or to play every game with it.
That's right. Well, 100-59 was the score against Georgia State. That was on Tuesday night. Again, 100-59. Outscored them 43-31 in the first half. Dylan, 57 points for you and your squad in the second half. In just 20 minutes, 57 points. I mean, offensively, without Jani Broome, you guys were clicking on all cylinders, and for you in particular, you had 6 points, 3 of 3 shooting, pulled down 6 boards, had 2 assists as well. You really had a good game the other night.
Yeah, you know, it's this next man up, bro, mentality. You know, we have a really deep team, and how about Chaney Johnson, you know, with 26 points and, you know, 8 boards and however many assists. It just goes to show how anybody on this team can really just step up whenever they want to.
I mean, that was a career high for Chaney, 26 points. He did have 8 rebounds, also had 4 assists against Georgia State. And that was retro Chaney Johnson right there. That was old school Chaney that we've seen for several years here on the Plains.
Yeah, no, it was. Just straight back to the basket, you know, get a bucket, go through someone's chest.
That's right. I mean, he's a grown man out there, Dylan. He really is. And just he's good with the basketball in his hands. You saw him with 26. Chad Baker had 19. Denver stepped up and had 17 as well. I mean, you guys were able to make it happen even without Jani on the floor.
Yeah, just like I said, I mean, we have a really deep team and they're fun guys to play with. And, you know, I don't know if a team shot the ball pretty well, but I know, Denver shot the ball insanely well.
You guys shot 57% from the floor as a team.
No, from three. I'm sorry.
Oh, from three. 36%, 9 of 25.
Yeah, I think Denver was 5 or 6 of those threes. So
yeah,
Denver's a great shooter, and he's been great for us.
I gotta ask, because for a team like you guys who are so tightly knit and tightly wound and so close on and off the floor, when you see one of your own, especially Jani, I mean, a guy that's in the running for National Player of the Year, when you see him go out with that type of injury, I mean, it was the shoulder, ran straight to the locker room and came back out in warmups after that and didn't play. I mean, what does that do to you guys in the game to try to close that off and just focus on the team you're going up against?
Yeah, really this next man mentality. When it first happened, it was a huge blow just mentally for our guys. So it was like, man, we got to play basketball because we're so used to how easy to play with him. So, but you saw how it's easy to play with him. And but yeah, it was hard at first, and then after halftime, we kind of like, oh, like we're used to playing without him in practice. Whenever we're playing best on best. And so it kind of opened up an opportunity for guys like Chad, guys like Denver, and guys like Chaney to just show they can do in a bigger clip.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans and people covering the game kind of saw what you just described. Was it was a shock when he went out, and there were several minutes where it was just kind of out of sorts, right? Offensively, defensively, a couple of turnovers here and there. It just seemed like you guys were a little uncomfortable, but then, yeah, you just realized, oh, wait, we're still a really, really good basketball team, and you proved that with 57 second-half points.
Yeah, and... yeah, just goes to show like how this team, man, anybody can step up. It's really, we're really, really hard to scout. I mean, you know, one player, our best player goes down, and then you have someone else just explode for 26, who kind of hasn't really had that big of an impact the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 games. You know, Mally's in foul trouble. Duke is in foul trouble. Ohio State is in foul trouble. And, you know, I'm pretty sure people aren't even scouting him anymore. Next thing you know, he drops 26 points and stuff for Chaney just to. He's our hardest worker. For him to just be in the gym and be ready for his moment when we need him most, man, all glory to God, for real, because it was just insane. We really needed him.
Dylan Cardwell, Auburn Basketball Center, joining us here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You can make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. We look ahead now, Dylan, to what Saturday brings. It's another big-time matchup. You take on Purdue up in Birmingham. As of this point, BP said on the postgame show Tuesday night, Jani would probably not play. And so until we get to that point, we'll assume that is the mentality and is the game plan. So how do you guys game plan for a really talented, really big Purdue team if Jani can't go?
Man, just continue to be who we are. Play with high energy. And just at the end of the day, our defense is going to win games. Our offense is going to come. So I'm pretty confident in our defense and in our shooting ability. But I believe this team, we have a chance, regardless of who's on the court, we have a chance to be good at all times.
And it's another top 20 matchup. I mean, I've lost count on how many times you guys have played top 20. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. This will be your fifth top 20 matchup before SEC play begins. I mean, you guys are going to be the most battle-tested team in the country.
That's what we need if we win the next championship. So I'm all for it. We want all the smoke, and it's just a blessing to go out here and have the schedule we have.
And you get to play in Birmingham, where I'm sure you're very aware of this. There's a lot of Auburn fans up there, and I expect there to be quite a few, just like we saw last weekend in Atlanta. Expect there to be a lot in Birmingham this Saturday?
Yeah, I expect there to be a whole lot. I'm excited to play in Birmingham. I love Birmingham, and I love the Auburn faithful because I always want to travel to those Birmingham games.
And then you get to come home and have one more game against Monmouth before SEC play begins. And you and I have talked about this a couple of times, but just to revisit the conversation where you look around the SEC, Dylan, I mean, it's incredible what this conference has done. And the start of y'all's schedule is going to be not the most difficult, but not easy because there are no nights off in the SEC.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we start off with Missouri, who just beat the number one team in Kansas. So I don't know if we'll ever have an off night or easy night ever again. You know, you gotta be on all 10. You know, the jungle can only help so much. You know, a team like Missouri, who was bottom of the SEC last year, turns around and beats the number one team the next year. It's like, it's pretty scary. So the SEC is going to be a scary team. It's going to be a scary conference. You know, I believe that we might get, you know, 10. We could possibly get, you know, 11 teams in March Madness. That'd be insane, but I think we're going to have a record-breaking number.
I mean, I think right now they're predicting 10, and that could grow. I mean, of course, 16 teams of the conference, and yeah, I think they're predicting 10 right now, and I think double digits is very, very feasible from the SEC. And so, yeah, you have Missouri at Texas, at South Carolina, and then home for Mississippi State. I want to ask you, in your opinion, the different lineups that you guys run with that BP throws out there, because there are so many guys that can play and anybody can hurt you at any given time. Is there a specific lineup that you feel that you perform the best in with the five on the floor?
No, I feel like I put anybody on the team, to be honest.
I mean, there you go. I mean, hey, that's a good spot to be in, though, right? I mean, that's a spot where you're comfortable, and it seems that way for everybody, and correct me if I'm wrong, where everybody seems comfortable with everybody, even if it's with guys like JP and Turtle, who aren't playing as many minutes. But, heck, look at the late game on Tuesday against Georgia State. They played really, really well.
Yeah, exactly. So we're all comfortable playing with one another and without one another, and, you know, it's just amazing to see this team just lock in and buy in with everything we've done.
Dylan Cardwell, Auburn basketball center, joining us for Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7. He's with us every single week on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And Dylan, as we look at the calendar, this will be the last time we talk to you until the start of the new year. We won't have anything next week with the holidays. And then the start of the new year for 2025, we'll be able to have you on and preview the game against Missouri and SEC play, my man. So, hey, safe travels and a Merry Christmas to you, all right?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
That is Dylan Cardwell joining us on ESPN 106.7. It is for Tiger Takes on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn.
And we will be back for our final segment here on the Thursday Drive, so stick with it. All aboard.